How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Oh, yeah, that happened. Celtics beat the Warriors. Let's talk about it.
It's time. You want the best Celtics talk around? Here it is. This is the Rain and Jays podcast. Here's John and Jay.
Oh, wow. That was a lot of fun last night, everybody. I am still buzzing. And Jay, you're still buzzing. You just landed in L.A. You're in L.A. now for the Celtics-Lakers game. We're recording on Saturday, so we're talking about that game tomorrow night. How was Oakland?
That was so much fun, man. That game, it's one of those nights where I'm just like, I can't believe I get paid to do this. I'm really sitting here watching Stephen Curry, Isaiah Thomas duel. I'm watching the Celtics knock off maybe the best team in NBA history, who had the longest home winning streak in NBA history, in just an incredible game that featured a bit of everything. It was a defensive struggle in the first half, an offensive shootout in the second half. I mean, basketball games don't get much better than that, much more exciting than that. And, yeah, it was just a fun, fun night.
Yeah, the Celtics go into Golden State and potentially do what no team in the NBA will do this year, is win on their home court. I can't even speak coherently about what I saw last night because it was such a great battle. So the question, I think, right off the top is this just a good matchup for the Celtics? The Celtics are a good team, but even without Crowder, which is amazing to me, I thought they were marching in there to a 40-point loss without Crowder. And I know they didn't have Iguodala, which might have changed the bench dynamic a little bit. But in Boston, double OT. In Golden State, a win, a three-point win, a tight battle the whole way. This is just one of those teams that matches up well, I guess, with Golden State.
Well, I think we've talked about this before. The Celtics might have, especially when Crowder's healthy, the best perimeter defense in the entire league. And so when you get Marcus Smart, who I thought he did a great job on Klay Thompson, you get Avery Bradley. He was started on Thompson, then went to Curry. I mean, he is tough. And he's so good at pressuring the ball and forcing turnovers. And Golden State's like their lone kryptonite. The thing that bites them, I guess, more often than probably anything else is turnovers. And they get a little careless with the ball. And when teams are careless, Boston pounces. And that happened last night. And I don't know if they played 10 times whether Boston would win another one or whether they'd get to overtime again. But because of that perimeter defense, they are better equipped to match up with the Warriors than most teams are. And so that has resulted in two fantastic games so far.
Amazing.
Maybe the two best games of the year. I'm trying to think. That Clippers game that went into overtime was unbelievable.
Yeah.
But
we could easily put these two games with Golden State at the top of the list. No one would argue that at all. Let's talk about Avery Bradley, because Damian Lillard, after the Portland game, called him the best perimeter defender in the league. So that is pretty high praise from one of the NBA's, I think he's in the top five right now, leading scorers. That is that's what Avery Bradley obviously makes his money. That's how he makes his money, being a top-notch defender. So amazing to watch him. And you had a great tweet the other day. It was actually yesterday, about Bradley up in Curry's airspace, like basically chest-to-chest with him as he was shooting in the first game in Boston. So Bradley just did an amazing job hounding these guys last night.
Yeah, It's so much fun to watch him play defense. Just seeing him navigate around screens, he twists his hips, and like he's not the strongest guy, but it is so damn hard to screen him. And he's so quick. He reacts to everything in a ridiculous amount of time. And you can tell guys hate playing against him. I mean, Damian Lillard pulled him aside immediately. He was like, "You're the best perimeter defender in the league." And then during the Warriors game, CJ McCollum, the Blazers' other high-scoring guard, tweeted that he thinks Bradley's the best perimeter defender, and it's not even close. And then Steve Kerr said, "Yeah, he's as good an on-ball defender in the league." Like, right now, Avery Bradley is just getting all sorts of credit from everywhere, and he deserves it. And I think there are better overall defenders, because he doesn't have the size, he doesn't have the versatility to guard a ton of positions. He can guard the one and two, basically. But when you can just sick him on one guy and say, follow this guy around the court and make his life hell, he is unbelievable at it. And that's what it takes against Klay Thompson, against Stephen Curry, and Avery Bradley in situations like that is as good as anybody in the NBA.
Yeah, it got to a point where Curry's best look was the one he got at the bottom of the jump circle at half court. That was his cleanest look of the night, and he nailed it. First of all, not fair. Not fair to be hitting that shot. That's ridiculous.
Not fair to be hitting most of the shots. I mean, he had 8 threes. It kind of felt like an off night, and he was bad for like a half, and he still hit 8 threes. It's ridiculous.
I really, seriously, when he goes out and scores 29 points, 6 assists as well, and it's a bad night. And it did feel like a bad night for him, but he was 8 of 14 from 3, so 1 of 5 inside the 3-point line. People don't really – like, obviously Curry is a 3-point god, but an underrated part of his game is his ability to get to the rim and finish at the rim and do some of the, you know, hit some of those scoop shots and reverse layups and distribute. And the Celtics did a good job limiting that. And there's nothing you can do about 8 three-pointers. He's going to do that. But, man, what Bradley is able to do against a top-notch player, back-to-back nights, Lillard and Curry. That is,
and Thompson, and he spent a lot of time on Thompson too,
right.
And he really limited Thompson, I thought.
And you've got a backcourt that's having two of the most historic seasons at the same time, on the same team, in Thompson and Curry, and Bradley's out, basically dogging each of those guys, taking turns on each of those guys, and he comes away with spectacular defensive numbers against both of them. So you're right. He is getting the praise, and he deserves that praise. And I'm hoping that maybe it results in maybe some all defensive first team all D to borrow from Tony Allen.
I suspect he's hoping that too. That's always one of his goals.
Yeah.
He doesn't have many individual goals, but the all defensive team is something that he shoots for every year. And I think, you know, given how good the Celtics defense has been and given how much they've relied on their perimeter defense, I think you have to consider Crowder, and I think you have to consider Bradley for one of those. I think it's just two teams, right? But I think they both have to be considered for that.
Absolutely.
And then another thing from that game, Isaiah Thomas starts on Curry and guards him for most of the first half. I was like, uh-oh, they're in trouble. That is not going to work out well. And Isaiah Thomas did a really good job too. And part of it is I think Stevens' scheme. A lot of teams switch big men onto Curry, and you see it where he just like crosses them over, gets an inch of space, and hails threes over their heads. And the Celtics don't do that. They want their guards to stay with him, and the big men are just there until the guards get back. And it really made things difficult on him. And they made other guys try to make plays, and Draymond Green is terrific. I love watching that guy play. He is an animal. But the Celtics, they've really done a good job defending the Warriors in both these games. And then second half, their offense was fantastic.
Yeah, you want to talk about that third quarter out of Isaiah Thomas, who changed shoes at halftime. Which was
the first pair of shoes didn't have any buckets in them.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
That's a great quote. So he changes shoes, and he gets 9 buckets in the third quarter. 7 of 9, 1 of 2 from 3, 18 points. 18 points. Half the Celtics' output in that third quarter. And that was, I mean, back and forth. They won that third quarter by 1 point, 37-36. Back and forth affair, and just a continuation of Isaiah Thomas's amazing march, where every time you start to doubt him, or every time, not you, I start to doubt him in certain ways, he just negates the narrative. The beginning of the season, it was he should be coming off the bench because you don't want that defensive liability in the starting lineup. And then he starts, and it works out. And you still say, well, you still should limit his minutes because he works so hard. And he doesn't play it. He hasn't gone like crazy with the minutes. But he has gotten an increase and no real effect. And you say, okay, he's an all-star, but he's not really a superstar level. And then he goes out in March after the all-star game and plays at a superstar level. It's just amazing. Every time he gets out there, he does something else that just shuts any sort of criticism up.
Yeah, and he—I mean, the way he was attacking Bogut. Bogut's a 7-footer, and he's finishing like little floaters over him. He's drawing fouls against him. Bogut is a really, really good defender, and he has 15 inches on Isaiah Thomas, and Thomas just never stops. It's always amazing to me that his mentality, you know, he goes 0 for 7 in the first half. He can't get anything to go. He's completely out of sorts. It seemed like the Warriors' defense was really, really flustering him and forcing him into things he didn't want to do. And then, bam, like just like that, he's humming. And he's getting to the hoop, and ones, floaters, everything. His ability to finish at his size is outrageous. And he just had, I mean, scoring-wise, he scored 20-plus points at every game in March. He has led the Celtics in scoring now, I believe, the last 15 games, which set Larry Bird – broke Larry Bird's record, team record. I mean, he has just been playing at a ridiculous level of offensively the past however many games. And then, you know, he guarded Curry on top of it against Golden State.
And that brings us to one of our Twitter questions that from Old School Shoes asking, is IT unfairly criticized for his D? He's obviously not locked down like Bradley, but he's at least as good as Damian Lillard, which, first of all,
I mean, that is no like high praise. At least as good as Damian Lillard,
like you or I are as
good as James Harden, guys, right?
Yeah, like that's that you don't have to be very good at all. You just have to be alive and breathing to be as good as Damian Lillard on D. But it's true, he is a little unfairly criticized, or maybe that's just a leftover narrative from the past, because he's not going to beat anybody one-on-one defensively. He's not going to be, obviously, Bradley or Marcus Smart. That's obvious. But he does enough. He isn't the liability that we thought he was earlier on. He's gotten better, and he plays within the system, and he does what he's asked. And, yeah, I think for what he is, who he is, that he plays pretty good D. The only thing you have to worry about is big guards switching onto him and taking him in the post. Like, that's the obvious thing you have to worry about. But within the system, he does work within the Celtics' defensive system. And that's a testament to his hard work and a testament to the work of the coaches to build a system in which a guy like Isaiah Thomas can do well.
I think his size does limit him in other ways too, not just in the post. I think it's tougher for him to direct the ball because he's not as big, and it's tough for him to get around screens because he's not as big. But that he's always worked hard, and I think that's been a bit of an equalizer for him because he is willing to put in the effort. And, yeah, he's not a complete liability on the defensive end. He's not elite, but he's not a complete liability. I mean, they've had top five defense basically all year, and he's been playing 32, 33 minutes a game. So that tells you a little bit that he's not killing the defense. And then his offense is just so good. He really is one of the best offensive players in the league. And I think he's proven that this year because he doesn't just score numbers, put up scoring numbers either. He does it efficiently. He does it while lifting his team's offensive rating by a ton. That Celtics offense looks completely different whenever he steps on the court. So it's been fun to watch him this month, and it does kind of feel like he's turned a corner. And I don't know what it was. I don't know how it happened. But in certain situations where, you know, I'm not sure he could have had that second half against the Warriors earlier in this season or last year. I really do believe that for whatever reason, he's just playing a lot better basketball right now than he was earlier in the season.
So he's doing this now. It's March. It's April now, but he had that great March. The Celtics are in this very high-profile run for the playoff seeding in the East. So they're going to have big games coming up against Atlanta, Miami, Charlotte. Everybody's going to be paying attention to this, and Isaiah Thomas is playing really, really well. So the question is, does he sneak onto one of these all-NBA teams?
I mean, here's the thing. You've got so many great guards. You've got Chris Paul, Stephen Curry, John Wall, Damian Lillard, Jimmy Butler, James Harden. Like, that's six right there, and there's only six guys that make it. And I'm not saying all those guys should make it over him. I'm not saying – I don't know where I put him. I haven't thought about it. I haven't looked deeply into it. But, I mean, he's close. And to say that the guy they got for a late first-round pick – and Marcus Thornton would be possibly on one of the All-NBA teams a year later is pretty outrageous. And I know for a fact the front office, they thought about not making that trade because there was consideration into tanking the rest of last season. And I think they made a really good choice to find Isaiah Thomas, bring him in, and he's just – really lifted their rebuilding process immediately since he got to the team and kind of brought them to another level. And none of the success they've had they wouldn't be having any of it without him. So he's been huge. And now that, you know, they have a chance, they've got to look attractive to free agents right now. They have to. And I think a lot of that is the way that Isaiah Thomas has played and kind of lifted them up since he got there.
Yeah, I mean, that is really amazing, and I think we probably shouldn't get into that discussion today because we got so much to talk about with the Golden State game and what's coming up. But that whole process of getting Isaiah Thomas, I would love to talk to the people involved and do like an oral history of the Isaiah Thomas trade, the people in the front office, and kind of get their thoughts. Is he too good? Is he going to make us too good? What would happen? Are the Celtics better off? What if the Celtics had gotten a top pick? It's so many different tentacles there. I love it. I love that they did the deal because I'm so anti-tanking. But I think that this shows that you can make a deal and do it a different way and still come out okay. So now, since you brought it up, let me bring up this Twitter question from Nicola Bogani. How important is this latest win in Golden State for free agency? That part one. Part two is, if you had to choose, who do you resign, Turner or Sully? So let's go to the Golden State thing. It just adds another layer to what's going on in Boston that I think guys around the league already know what's going on in Boston, but This is just another exclamation point at the end of the sentence. Hey, free agents, look at what's happening here. Look at how good this team is without you, Mr. Superstar, in waiting. Imagine how good we could be with you. Like, that is a – I think that's just another example for people out there. And who knows if it's going to work, but I think that the Celtics get the meetings. They get their phone calls answered when they call the high-profile free agent, whomever it may be, to say, what do you think? What do you think about Boston? Can we have a little talk? Can we make you a little pitch to you? Can we pitch you on Boston? And I think most of these guys will start to say yes.
Yeah, and you know, you see Damian Lillard tweeting like, great win, Boston. And it was an ESPN game. Everyone's paying attention. So yeah, yes, it matters. I don't know how much it matters, but seeing that effort and the way they play and how fun their style is and how much they share the ball and how hard they play, how much fun they seem to have, that all matters. So I don't know how much it matters. Again, I don't know whether they'll be able to sign a free agent, but that stuff's important. And actually, last night I got a couple texts from people around the league saying, man, watch out once that team gets another star, because they are going to be tough. They really are. I mean, give them one more star and who knows how good they'll be, because they're close right now. They have a top five defense. Their offense might be one guy away from being elite. So that team, and they're set up for the future. So
yeah, it's amazing. It's just everything coming together the right way. And you still need luck. Absolutely, yeah. Still need luck. And you still need some things to come through. But I can't imagine being in a better position when you have all of these things considered, that they've got picks, they've got money, they've got players. They can go any number of different ways. And maybe that's where the Celtics are best set up. They can have a plan A. And if that doesn't work out, plan B is pretty good. And plan C is actually not so bad either. So plan A, let's just say it's signed free agents. Let's pretend that that's plan A. It might not be. Plan B is to make a trade for a big-time guy. Plan C is to kind of keep it going and build through the draft. So they can do any one of those three things and still be in pretty good shape. So that is a complete testament to Danny Ainge. What that front office has done is amazing. I just, when people criticize Danny Ainge, it blows my mind, because just look at the stuff that he's pulled off. Look at the position the Celtics are in, and they're in a great spot. What can you say?
There are only a few teams I would say that have the same type of future potential that are as young as they are. I would say it'd be like Utah, Minnesota, Milwaukee, and there's got to be someone I'm forgetting. But those guys, and none of them have Brad Stevens, though.
That's true. I will say this. Milwaukee, ever since they put Giannis at point guard, has been, like, super scary. Like, that was one of the smarter moves you're going to see in the NBA. Like, they just decided, hey, what about making you a point guard? And he's just blossomed. So that's pretty amazing. The other part of Nicola's question was, if you had to choose between Turner or Sullinger, who would you re-sign? So I don't, man, it depends so much on who else the Celtics get. If the Celtics can get a solid wing to come off of the bench, then maybe you don't need to bring in Evan Turner, bring him back.
That you're even considering this is unbelievable. Where you were earlier this season.
People didn't hear you don't hear the conversation we had before we start the show, but basically, Jay, you were saying that you made a great point about Derek Lee. I'm going to go back to calling him Derek. David Lee kind of clogging up the space that Evan Turner needs to operate. And once he was gone, things changed for Evan Turner. I think there's a pretty clear line of demarcation in Evan Turner's season, that when Lee left, his play went through the roof, and there's no denying it. I never hated Evan Turner, the guy. I just hated his performance. But ever since then, his performance has been great, and it's been very, very important. And look, last night in that fourth quarter, he was awesome. He had a 10-point fourth quarter, 4 of 6 from the field, 2 assists. He had a huge, huge fourth quarter. And the Celtics don't win that game without Evan Turner. They probably don't win that game without everybody playing the way they played, but you got to give the guy credit. And so, yeah, depending on how the team is constructed, then I can see a scenario in which he comes back to Boston, because really, if he goes somewhere else, there's no guarantee that he's going to be used the same way. And frankly, the way he's being used in Boston is perfect for his skill set. And if you try to do anything else with him, it's not going to work out. Indy had him as a spot-up shooter. He's not that guy. And so, yeah, if he can come back to Boston in this same role, I can see that working out, absolutely. But it depends on who the Celtics bring in, who they trade for, or who they sign as a free agent. If they sign a big, then Sullinger becomes a little more expendable if they sign a guy that can kind of do his job but better. So if you have to pick between one of those two, it just really depends on who the Celtics bring in and who becomes expendable because of that.
Yeah, and then what type of role? Because I think Turner, as you said, he needs that specific role. He needs to have the ball in his hand. He needs to, you know, get his post-up touches. He needs to operate in the mid-range. He needs shooters around him. Yeah, it depends, you know, what type of guys you bring in. And do you want to get Marcus Smart the ball more often? Because that's another thing to think about going into the future. Because with Evan Turner around in the second unit, Smart doesn't get as many pick and roll touches. He doesn't get to kind of blossom as a playmaker. And he's shown some fun playmaking, I think, during this season. And we saw it again against Golden State. That one finish against Maurice Spates was awesome. And he just kind of like quick jumped off his foot and finished before Spates could even really react. And I thought it was so funny that the camera panned to the Celtics bench and everyone was just laughing at it. I can't believe he just did that. But he had a really good second half, I thought, especially, and really shut down Klay Thompson. Had that wild tip in, 6 assists. Finally hit a three. Finally got one to go down.
Man,
after going 0 for his previous 18, which gross. But that's another thing. That's another thing to think about is Marcus Smart's development and how Turner affects that. And then Sullinger, he's got questions too, you know. Is he a guy who's going to stay committed once he gets the next contract? Is he a guy whose body can hold up? I don't know the answers to that. And I'm not sure the Celtics do either. I'm not sure anybody does. And he's going to get paid because he's had a really good year. And Turner's going to get paid too. The money's going to be flying around this summer. And those are two guys who will get pretty sizable. I had one guy in a rival front office asked me if I think Evan Turner is going to get $10+ million per year. And I was like, huh? And then he said, no, really? Like, he might.
That is amazing. Yeah. But, you know, you have to wonder, I don't know, like, who's going to give him that money? I know that I've said on this show before, the money is going to be more ridiculous than you expect. Gird your loins. This is going to be a crazy summer. Guys are going to be getting ridiculous amounts of money, and it's going to be like, I can't wait for Twitter in July for all of the crazy reactions to the amount of money that guys are going to get. But still, I would think that everyone understands the very specific role that he needs to thrive. So Who's going
to
be giving?
He also does a lot of things. Like, yeah, he needs to be like operating the mid range and stuff like that. But he also can play the one, the two, the three. He rebounds well. He can defend multiple positions. He can handle the ball. So he can play with small guards. He can play with big guards. So he does a lot of things. He does bring a lot to the table. I'll give him that. It's not like he only does a few things. Like, he does everything except shoot. I guess that's kind of a big skill.
That's kind of important, especially in today's NBA. But, yeah, who knows? Maybe he gets $10 million. Maybe he takes a little hometown discount. Maybe he just likes Boston so much that he wants to stick around and doesn't get paid as much as that. Who knows? It just depends on what the market bears, and it'd be hard to turn down $10 million if the Celtics aren't willing to come close. So, but, yeah, Sullinger's going to get paid. We'll just have to see how that goes. You brought up Marcus Smart. Let's talk about Marcus Smart a little bit more, because he was huge, 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 huge down the stretch for the Celtics. I think his fourth quarter was really great. I think he had a good game. I think he's shown some growth over the past couple of weeks. He hasn't been able to shoot, obviously. That's been a problem. But I think since the fine for grabbing his nuts in response to a technical in response to the referee and getting a tech, since then, I think that he's made a strong effort to not complain as much. It doesn't always work. Sometimes he gets demonstrative. I think he's trying.
It's sometimes it's almost comical how much he tries. It's like you can see him like bubbling inside, and he's like ready to erupt, and then he like turns around and just like sprints away from the ref and just goes back on defense or something. Like, it is very, very evident that he is doing his best not to show up the referees or argue with them or whatever. And I think that that's huge. I really do think that he was getting some calls going against him because of the way he was reacting to referees. And I think, you know, obviously, in a perfect world, referees wouldn't react to the way players behave toward them. But these guys are humans, and they do, whether they do it consciously or not, that happens. So, yeah, Smart has definitely made a conscious decision to stop complaining to the referees. And he's done a good job of it.
He has.
Yeah.
You're right. It is pretty funny, because all of a sudden he'll just – you can see it, and then it's something clicks inside of him,
yeah,
and he's like, nope, go, just run back. And
you can see him like tackling the beast inside of him.
Which means that someone in the organization, Brad, Ainge, somebody said something, and somebody told him it has to stop. And it's a realization that he's had too, but it's working. And not only that, His shot selection, I think, is changing a little bit more. It's not always great, but he seems to be driving a little bit more. He's not taking every three that's out there. And then obviously he's playing some great defense. So that is that combination is showing his growth. I think it's been ridiculous, absolutely goddamn ridiculous, that people want to take shots at him and say that he should be traded, and all of these that are benched. Like, that's crazy. That is crazy. This kid, I don't know if he's going to be one of the cornerstone pieces that you might expect a guy who's drafted as high as he was would be, but he could be, and he does so many things. He plays such great defense, and like you said, his playmaking has shown some signs. Like, he had a nice drive down the baseline, and I forget who he dumped it off to, but it was a really nice pass last night. That he can do these things and recognize these things. His passing's getting better. Once he figures out that jump shot, and hopefully he figures out that jump shot, man, that kid's going to be really, really good. So I've said it a million times. I'll say it a million more. You don't give up on a 22-year-old kid, especially when he's got this level of talent and his skill set. And to suggest otherwise almost makes me think that you don't watch any basketball at all. And the reason I'm couching it is because Bob Ryan said one of these things, and it blows my mind that he, of all people, would say something like that. But I giving up on Marcus Smart has been, I think, one of the most ridiculous things that's happened over the past couple of weeks. And I like what I'm seeing. I like the fact that he's showing signs of maturity. And so that's it.
What did Bob say specifically? I'm trying to remember the quote. It was something he doesn't seem like a leader. He's an agitator.
Yeah. And then, I forget the exact quote. He called him a jerk.
Yeah, like more of a pest than like a leader.
And yeah. Yeah.
I think he is a pest. I think he absolutely is an agitator, but I also think he's a leader. And talking to guys inside the Celtics locker room, they're almost in awe at the level of his competitiveness. Like they talk about him like he is just on a completely different plane when it comes to competing. And that comes from a bunch of guys who are all really competitive themselves. So I believe he is a leader. They've talked about him like he's a leader since he got to the team. And the backlash was crazy. And it came because he had the shooting slump. If he didn't have the shooting slump, none of the other backlash would have come. It would have been like, oh, whatever, he's had a couple technicals. Isaiah Thomas has had 12 or 13 technicals. Nobody gives a damn because he's scoring 20-plus points every
exactly.
night.
Exactly.
But so it came because of the shooting slump. And I'm not ready to give up on him becoming a shooter because he does have stretches where he's really effective from behind the arc. And so maybe it's something with his confidence. Maybe he needs to figure out something with his mechanics that will get him back to the stretches where he's really good from behind the arc. But he does have stretches. And like a guy like Rajon Rondo, for example, he never had stretches. Like Smart has had like months where he's been good from behind the arc. And guys like Rajon Rondo never did that. There are a lot of guys who never did that. And obviously Smart's shooting for the past month has been brutal. His shooting for the first couple months of the season was brutal. But he does have stretches where he's a plus for him back there. And that I think that's got to be a positive. But obviously, we'll see how he develops. But it's not time to give up on him becoming a star, I don't think, because he's so good defensively. And he does show signs of being able to use his athleticism. And he's starting to kind of figure out how to use his strength, I think. And he just needs to figure out how to finish. And once he figures out how to finish, that kid will be very tough to stop in addition to being one of the top perimeter defenders in the league.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. And it's a good point about his shooting and the stretches, because you're right. He does have those stretches. I think that he can at least get to about the league average from three. He's never going to be 40-plus guy, I don't think, percent from behind the arc. But I don't think it's a stretch to say that he could become a 34-35% three-point shooter, which is – that's great. I mean, if he gets in that 33-35% range, that's enough, I think, for him. And the rest of his game will I think, fill out some pretty good scoring nights. So I'm completely on board with Marcus Smart, and I know some people aren't, and I know some people listening aren't, but I'm completely on board, at least for now, and give him another year or two before we start saying, all right, let's, you know, whatever, however direction we want to go.
The fact that he's a net plus while shooting so miserably.
Yes.
Is outrageous, first of all. And I think it bodes well toward him becoming a really good player because, I mean, he couldn't shoot worse. There have not been many shooters in the history of the NBA who have shot worse than Marcus Smart has this season. And he's still a net plus. That is crazy to me. But he just does so many other things, and he's so physical. He makes all the winning plays. He's a leader, Bob Ryan. He's a leader. And Bob Ryan, I love that guy.
I know. Like,
he's
I feel
my
like,
absolute idol.
I know. I feel weird. It was just coming from him, it felt so weird. I, like most people, I just come out and be like, oh, that guy's a jerk. Whatever. Like,
Tanguay again. He's firing off.
Yeah, like that guy. Like, whatever, man. But like Mr. Ryan, respectfully disagree with your position on Marcus Smart, sir. You know, like, that's the kind of feeling I'm getting. It's like, I feel like chills, like my body's seizing against me, but, you know, I think he's wrong on this. Back to a couple of these Twitter questions. Which first round matchup do you most want for the Celtics? This comes from Matthew Potter. Which first round matchup do you most want for the Celtics? Man, that's
the that Warriors. I want a 7-game first round series with the Warriors, man.
Because that question seemed a lot easier a month ago. You'd say Charlotte, I think, would be the obvious answer, and still I think of the
I
three,
still think you got to go with Charlotte, but
it's not it doesn't feel as comfortable.
All those teams are so similar. Like, they're all good. They can all beat each other. They're all very similar. They pose different challenges, but Miami, Atlanta, Charlotte, and Boston, very similar teams. And the first round should be fun in the East.
Yeah.
I think Toronto and Cleveland should steamroll whoever they play. But from the 3-6 and 4-5 matchups should be very closely contested.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty insane to watch the way this all shakes out, because everybody's right there, and I don't even care about the playoff seeding anymore. Like, people want to say you want to avoid Cleveland in the second round. Yeah, I guess, but that doesn't really matter. Whoever you play, if you want to get Toronto, is really Toronto in the second round, is that much better? It's better, I guess, but I don't know. I think the Celtics and Charlotte would be a fun matchup. See seven games out of those two teams would be a very underrated fun series in the playoffs. Charlotte's playing really, really well. They're just, for all of the crap that we gave Jordan for not taking that deal and taking Kaminsky, everything that's happening in Charlotte right now is actually working out. And it helps that Jeremy Lin is having a six-man of the year type season.
And you know who would look really good over there? Justice Winslow. That if they had just picked Justice Winslow, man.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Kemba Walker's having a great season. I mean, it's just what else? I'm missing one more. Bailey sends this tweet. Shout out to Rozier's rebounding ability. That boy got springs.
That boy does got springs.
I got to tell you, man, Rozier, I don't know what kind of player he's going to ultimately become, but that guy is one of the best athletes out there. He's just got so much athleticism. It's amazing to watch.
And he's so fluid. It's like everything, he just moves so easily. Like, there are some guys who can really jump, but like, he just moves differently than most guys. Like, he's just really, really a good athlete. An amazing athlete.
Yeah.
And when he soars for rebounds, and he does it a lot, he's grabbing more rebounds right now than any backup point guard should. But he soars for those. So
yeah,
I don't know what type of player he's going to be. I don't know what he will ultimately become, but the boy got springs.
He's got springs. That's for sure. yeah, he's fast. He's unbelievable. I mean, he's going to be, I think he's going to be a nice pickup. When we look back on that draft, I think that the question marks that we had about him, I think it's going to be a nice, I don't know if he's going to be more than a backup point guard or what, but I think he's going to be ultimately a nice pickup for Boston in the long run.
It was funny, the other day in Portland, Brad Stevens was asked a question about Terry, and he was like, the thing about him is he just kept working, and doesn't matter whether he played, whether he was in the D League, whether whatever, he just kept working. And then whoever asked it was like, I meant Terry Stotts, Brad. But
that was great.
But he's a worker, so that's good.
All right, this was a great game last night. Let's just leave it on this high. This is a nice little 45-minute show. I think we're in a good place. Let's just hope that the Celtics, by the time people listen to this, hopefully the Celtics will not have spoiled the win in Golden State by losing to the Lakers again. Let's finish out this road trip. I said going in that 3-2 on this road trip would be amazing. And I thought that that third win would have been the Portland game. For them to get this game is amazing. Let's finish this thing out. And
yeah,
the playoffs, the seeding, everybody's in such a little bunch. They got that nice stretch coming down where they play all of those teams one more time. Like, that is perfectly set up.
It really is. It's unreal.
I can't believe, like, you can't boom, 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 all in a row. And the best part is that the Celtics already have the tiebreaker against Miami and against Charlotte. So that's really going to be in their favor. I really like the Celtics to at least get that 4 seed. Third seed is not out of the question, but man, Atlanta's schedule is so easy that I have a hard time thinking that they're going to lose much. So this is going to be a hell of a finish to the season, man.
It is. It's fun. It's fun. And as you said, that going 3-2, if they do knock off the Lakers like they should, going 3-2 on that road trip with Crowder only playing a couple of games, huge. I mean, you look at that road trip, 5-game road trip out west with games against the Warriors, Clippers, and Blazers. If you come out 3-2 of that, I mean, that's huge down the stretch. And, yeah, finish off with Miami, Charlotte, and Atlanta.
3 games against those guys.
Oh, this is going to be fun.
This is a hell of a way to end the season. It's just amazing. It's fun to watch. And we will be back here next week to talk about it, hopefully after a few more wins and a better look at what the playoffs are going to bring. We'll be here. If you're listening to us on iTunes, go over right now, and give us a rating, please. Give us a good rating, not just a rating, a good one.
A perfect rating.
Yeah, like 5 stars would be amazing. I think this show deserves 5 stars.
At least.
At least. All right, we're going to wrap it up. Follow us, read us, rate us, and listen, and we'll see you next week on the Rain and Jays podcast.
Fall has arrived at JCPenney, the perfect time to refresh your home. From now until Sunday, get up to 50% off select comforter sets, furniture, and the most comfortable mattresses from top brands like Tempur-Pedic, Sealy, Beautyrest, and more. And save 50 to 60% on select sheet sets, plus an extra 15% with your coupon on select home items. Hurry, end soon. That's getting your pennies worth. JCPenney. Coupon valid 9/28 to 10/9 on select home items, furniture, and mattresses. Prices valid 9/28 to 10/1. Selections vary by store while supplies last. Fittings on regular and original prices. Intermediate markdowns may have been taken. Some exclusions apply. See store or jcp.com for details.